broadcasting live from the East Eddy Ranch, and we have quite a show kind of coming up tonight. Before we get into the show, I just wanted to give people a little heads up to start watching the skies, because over the ranch lately, we've just had phenomenal sightings. We've had guests coming up. Tonight, I thought about throwing a phone out to the field to see what's going on, but we're rained out tonight, so we won't be doing that. But I have something even better to bring to you tonight, and that's Jessica Mystic, and she's kind of a voice for the Indigo people, the Indigo children that are coming in, and a voice for the younger generation, you might say, to talk about kind of what they feel is coming up for us in the future, and how they'd like to see the planet on which we live. So let's bring Jessica on the show. Are you with us, Jessica?
Yes, I am. Thank you, James, for having me on the show. Hello, everybody out in Radio Land.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. How did you get into this? I know that it started with Camelot interview, and then it kind of went from there. Could you give us a quick rundown on how that all opened up for you?
Do you mean, like, beforehand, the very introduction of what I stated in my Project Camelot interview, or how I got on Project Camelot?
Well, no, more like just how this all started for you, like moving into being a spokesman for the younger generation and to give them a voice.
Okay, then I'd have to start about where I was, you know, this story has, I'll just give a run through, even though it is also in the Project Camelot interview. Is that what you want?
Yes.
When I was about 16, my sister passed away, and when she passed away, my father ended up having strokes, and then not too long after that, my father told me that, you know, Melissa, that's the name of my sister, she had come back, only the thing was she already had crossed over, and mediums usually, you know, speak to people who haven't crossed over to help them cross over, kind of thing. And so it was kind of, you know, very bizarre. I mean, I really didn't believe my father because he had a stroke. I was pretty sure he was crazy. But she said that it was such an exciting time to be alive, and certain members of the family have been called for a very specific mission, and that she was, you know, doing a lot of work out in the universe, and it's like a big garden. There's lots of tending to. After she came through, then angels started coming through, and then extraterrestrials, the Pleiadians, and Andromedans and the Melchizedek and so forth. It just got very bizarre, and I wanted nothing to do with this because I really wanted to be normal, but that was not going to happen. And so I would try to avoid it, and I would go to the bookstore, and books would fall at my feet with the kind of subject that my dad was trying to get through to me about, and I would just be walking on the street, and people would come up to me, people I knew and people I didn't know, and they'd hand me books on the same kind of information, and some people didn't even know why they were giving me the book, you know. So when I mean, it was almost like they were inspired as well. And after that, after a while, like when it keeps happening to you and you're very stubborn about it, then there's always some kind of major breaking point that like determines and opens you up to it. In my case, I was working on sets. I was working in the film industry at that time, and a man came up to me I've never seen in my entire life, and he said, "Excuse me, is your name Jessica?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Your last name Shaw?" "Yes." "And is your parents' name Roseanne and Terry?" And I was really freaked out. I'm like, "How do you know all this about me?" And he's just like, "Okay, this is for you," and gives me all these tapes on the CIA, underground militia, and Starseed, everything that my father was trying to get through to me. But I just refused to look at any of the books or any of the information before. But after that, it was kind of like, okay, something is really trying to get through to me. And then I watched it, and I had a major existential breakdown, and everything I thought I knew kind of just died in that moment. And then after that, my father passed away, and I felt, you know, very alone, and I really just knew that there's got to be other people out there that are having these same kind of experiences. And so I went off traveling, trying to find other people who were, you know, of like minds, and help them, you know that they're not alone, and that there are about their mission and what they came here to do at this time, and then hook them up with other people of like minds. And that's really how it started. It was just really the understanding of how lonely you felt with this information and, you know, struggling to make sense of it, that I just wanted to be there for others who were going through the same thing, you know, thinking they were crazy or going through guilt or having a hard time dealing with themselves.
Did you feel like an alien?
Pardon?
I said, did you feel like an alien?
Oh, yes, definitely. Well, I'd always say things. I'd always, like, ostracize myself, too. You know, I'd say, angels are aliens and aliens are angels. And that was way before my father started to talk to me about these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really incredible.
Yeah, there's a lot of synchronicities with what I went through as well, because when I woke up, mine went through a death experience where I actually drowned and crossed over and was gone for quite some time and then came back. And then I found out the whole world around me, I just didn't fit anymore. And I was trying to get answers, and I couldn't get answers where I was. There was nobody that could really give me any of the answers to what I experienced. And then I started to seek it out through, you know, alternative means, and study with Tibetan masters and lamas and a lot of different yogis and things like that. And then I started getting answers, and I saw that I definitely had to get outside the box. But I even found out that they had boxes that I had to, you know, keep stepping out of, because it's so vast what's going on.
That's right. I mean, always watching all beliefs and knowing that they can be a box as well. And so rather than tying yourself to one, working with all of them, integrating them,
mm-hmm.
the truth in each one, so that you can understand the bigger picture.
Yeah, I tell people it's like an orange. You know, you peel it, you eat the meat, and spit out the seeds.
Yeah.
You know, to treat every belief system that way and not, pick up the sword with any belief, because no belief is worth fighting for.
Absolutely. Hell is not worth fighting for. One of the things Jewel says in her songs, which I found very profound.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people tend to find, you know, their connection with this higher level through near-death experiences, because they get to really, you know, feel the other side and see, you know, I like to call it the behind the scenes,
mm-hmm.
the magic of what, like, so when people get to go on a film set and see the behind the scenes, they're totally intrigued and fascinated to see how everything works, right?
Yeah.
And it just has this whole new understanding and respect and appreciation for the craft, and you never look at films the same way. I think that's the same way for life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people come up here a lot, and their whole reality gets turned upside down. And when they, you know, they see the ship, depending on how close the ships get to them, if they're just up doing their thing in a distance, it really opens them up, and they feel an exchange. But when the ships come down really close and power up and pulse the people in the field, that really turns their, you know, reality upside down, because there is an energy exchange that goes along with it. And, you know, I've watched people go through a complete transformation process just because of that one experience, that one event.
Where you're located, you have an area that does not have a veil over it.
Mm-hmm.
Most locations in the sky have a veil over it, and only on occasion do the craft let themselves be seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have an invisibility cloak, and
yeah.
It's pretty interesting how it works. I've played around and experimented with it. But, you know, we're using only 30% of our eyes, so there's a heck of a lot that we're not seeing. And what's really interesting is vaccinations are preventing a lot of people from seeing craft. I came across this story about the shaman's children, where in this small town, everybody in the school was to be vaccinated,
mm-hmm.
and the shaman wouldn't let their children be vaccinated, and so when the UFOs were flying over, no one could see them except the kids.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's really neat, though, when people come in contact with these kind of things, because it helps them connect with their, you know, multidimensional nature, you know, that deeper level within themselves.
Yeah, I've seen that again and again and again, that our whole society right now, you know, not to focus on the negative, but there does seem to be a major agenda just to dumb people down, to dumb your senses down, and it's hitting people on every level, through the food, through all the chemicals, through, you know, the vaccines, there's so many different things that they're doing to dumb people down, not to mention the chemtrails, you know, it's just insane that when you think about what kind of I know for your frame of mind, it's almost like unthinkable. How could anybody even do such a thing? You know, it's like I know a lot of the Palladians have that same belief system, but so far outside of the reality that they have a hard time even believing some of the things that go on down here on Earth.
Well, they don't have duality like we do. You know, it's very foreign to them, and they're, you know, pretty amazed by us and what we're, you know, what we volunteered here to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they don't have that much diversity like we do. You know, our planet is known as the Diversity University. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I work with them too. I think it's really interesting because a lot of people put all their power and belief in these guides and the Pleiadians, and, you know, really it's a team. They are working through us. You know, they need the physical, and the physical needs the spiritual in order to have this kind of, you know, experience that we're having. And so we're constantly teaching each other, you know, the reason why, you know, we have this mass dumbing down going, you know, you said that it's hard for you to understand, but, I mean, have you ever had, like, thoughts that were very, you know, hurtful and destructive unto yourself? What it is, it seems to be just a collective of our self-destructive nature on a macrocosm level, with each of us and our relationship with ourselves and the world. Can you hang up, please? Sorry, I have a family here, so. And so, let's see, each of us in our relationship with the world will, like, determine what the macrocosm version of that will be. Like, for example, we have a lot of people who decide what will go on into our media or what will be in our education system, right? Well, that's no different than our conscious mind. Like, we are having paranormal experiences all the time. Majority of the planet has had contact with extraterrestrials, and they don't even know or remember, because our conscious mind acts like a filter, like the Illuminati, and decides what we can see and what we can't see, and what is true and what is not. So it gets filed to the bottom of our, you know, subconscious, and filters out in dreams or, you know, daydreams or visions. Later on, it becomes a bleed-through into our reality. But if you challenge your beliefs, your concept of truth, and are able to be really honest with yourself, then you'll start to access those memories, being taken up on ships, working on the ships. I know that I've not only have I been on the ships, but I actually know how to fly them and I navigate them. So
I don't think they'll give me mine back.
Oh, they definitely will. you mean their ship? They won't give your ship back?
Yeah, because I'd probably power up the lasers and take a trip to Washington. So
violation.
I know. I'm just kidding. But I just beam them up, you know, and drop them off on a primitive planet with a lot of predators and let them have some fun, and then put them back and see. If
Yeah. And do you remember how to fly the ships? Do you know how they do it?
Yeah, you know what? You know, this is spooky. I haven't said this very often, but my memories go back probably about 7.5 billion years. It's crazy.
Are you sure that's back or forward?
Well,
or multidimensional?
Yeah, who knows? But
what is time?
Yeah. Basically, I actually remember flying by the Earth in a beautiful ship, and I had one of those suits on, like in Star Wars. Before I ever saw Star Wars, I had these visions and dreams and memories popping in my head. And it was all white, you know, with a white helmet on it. And I had, the ship was all white, and I was actually flying to some other planets that were extremely advanced planets, but they're having trouble with their grid, and their energy fields on the planets were imbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was my job to go there, and the ship would fly around, and it would send certain frequencies and energies in to balance out that planet so their evolution would keep moving forward, you know, and not fall back. And it was kind of I don't know all the details of it, but I remember flying by the Earth and it wasn't even solidified yet.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, you know, that's going to be a really nice planet someday. But, you know, those are the kind of stories they lock you up for, you know, so I don't tell those too often.
Oh, it all depends on how you share it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can. There's a lot of people who are trying to push their truth on people, and
you'll see,
kind of thing. But I just choose to speak to that part of the person that already knows.
Yeah.
And so it's just like it's confirmation, and it, you know, it puts articulation into, you know, thoughts they've had but never found the right words. And so then that starts to activate them, their memories, and, like, opens them up. Like you said, people are changed by coming to your ranch. People are, you know, very changed by just, you know, coming in contact with me as well, because it's an activation right then and there.
Yeah, that's what Kazika was saying. He says people have no idea what happens on the outskirts of their aura and how their energy fields affect other people. I had an experience down in Mexico that I'll share with you. It was really interesting, but I was sitting there having breakfast, and I felt this, you know, the big warm fuzzy come over me, and really got high, you know, almost, you know, it was amazing. And all of a sudden I looked at the plaza and there's all these people just mingling back and forth, walking in and out. And there's people walking really fast through the plaza. And what was interesting is all of a sudden the scene shifted. I shifted looking at it from another level, and I could see the energy fields of everybody as they're moving around. And some people were kind of gray. They weren't real light. And then these people with this beautiful golden energy around them were just weaving through the whole group. And I could see they're almost like laying a grid down. It was on automatic pilot. And I knew a couple of these people. I met them earlier, and I automatically was gravitated to them right away. I felt a real kinship, a real, you know, a good connection with them. And I was watching as this happened, and I recognized a couple of the people in this group. But I'm just seeing how that there's all these people, like indigo people or golden children. There's all these different names for them. But they're actually weaving their energies through the entire collective consciousness down here and affecting people in ways that they're not even aware of.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think they're also a part of just assisting people through making the transition bridges from the third to the fourth to the fifth dimension.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite interesting. And you talk to a lot of these people, and they, you know, usually, and, you know, I've been doing this for quite some time, and we just have to take people from square one to here, you know, and sometimes give them the science and everything so they can understand it. And a lot of the younger people, you talk to them and they just look at you funny, like, you know, what, you know, tell me something new, you know. They already have it. They already get it, you know.
Yep.
You don't have to talk them into it.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, my nephew used to go up on the ship, and he used to talk to my mom and my sister all the time and say, you know, why does everybody think they're flying saucers? He says, a lot of them are triangle. They're all different shapes and sizes. And he was, you know, saying all these things. And I'd start to talk to him about the ships here and everything. He'd just look at me and go, why are you trying to prove to me that the ships are real? You know, like, oh, yeah. You know, I forget that it's just part of his reality.
Yeah. And the younger ones are fully equipped with, you know, the deep understanding and memories of this and are, like, here to take it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I feel I'm here to do, is just take all the information that we have right now into the next level and quantify it, make a quantum leap into, you know, that takes everybody into, you know, where we integrate our mysticism with our technology, which is happening right now, you know, because
mm-hmm.
people are now starting to see the patterns and the similarities between the two.
Yeah, I used to work with Marcel Vogel before he died, and I was kind of his guinea pig. And he had technologies that were just amazing. He could measure each chakra on the body, how much energy was in it, and could tell your whole life story with his little equipment. It was pretty amazing. And I was in his studio, and he measured my chakras and right after the near-death experience. And when he hit the crown chakra, the needle pegged. It went off the scale. And he just looked at me and he said, you've had a near-death experience, haven't you? I said, yeah. And it was really funny. And he's looking at all of his readings. But unfortunately, he died. But he had some pretty interesting technology, how to send frequencies through the ethers and heal people and all kinds of other really bizarre technologies.
I'm sure someone else will pick it up telepathically, you know, as inspiration and start working with that as well. I mean, a lot of it is recycled, and we are all getting the same thing. We're all, you know, just expressing it differently.
Well, I like what he said. He said, you know, all these toys I'm building are just to validate what we can do in consciousness.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, that's what the purpose of technology is. My guys always say it's training wheels for what we're able to do on our own. I mean, if you look at a cell phone, well, that's telepathy. If you look at, you know, a CAT scan, many mystics can look inside the body and know what's going on and what needs to be done. And then there's also the internet, which is the neural net of the one and the many minds, like the Akashic Records, kind of a primitive version of that. I mean, even within nature, I mean, animals are able to, it's not bizarre to them. You know, what we consider paranormal is very normal. Like we have the Jesus lizard that can walk on water, animals that are well aware of natural disasters before they occur, you know, because they're so connected
mm-hmm.
with the planet. A lot of sea life is very sensitive to currents, electromagnetic frequency, which is a scientific term, but the mystical term is aura.
Oh, yeah. you know, they watch flocks of birds, and they all adjust at the exact same time. So it shows they're all linked in the same conscious network, you might say.
That's right. And they never crash into each other. And just imagine the mathematics behind that, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or how, you know, animals know intuitively, you know, what to do if they have babies and so forth.
And,
that's within us. I mean, I'm really self-taught with a lot of my abilities. I've never studied anywhere. I would meet a Reiki master, and I told them I know Reiki, and they said, prove it, and so I did. And then they wrote me up certifications in 1, 2, and masters right then and there, which is just really, you know, we always hear that it's all within us. But who really trusts himself enough to pull it out, to experience and witness it firsthand? You know, we don't believe in ourselves so much that we're willing to give our power over to others all the time, or get in debt in the process.
Yeah, I've seen that. I've seen some of the Reiki things. Quite a while ago, we had a thing going on in here. We call it the Reiki Wars. And it was kind of funny because I couldn't relate to it. I said, what are you talking about? And they had 3 or 4 different Reiki groups, and they all had a different lineage or a different master, and one was charging thousands of dollars, and the other one was charging $100 or something. And they're all arguing, and I came into this room, and they're all of the heads of each group were there, and they're arguing over which lineage was better and everything, and they asked me to settle it, or they asked me to comment on it, and I just said, I said, I can't even relate to what you're talking about. I said, this discussion shouldn't even be going on, because I said, what is Reiki? You know, and I said, it's universal life force. It's love. And I said, so what's the problem? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really silly. I'm surprised that they would argue.
I just said, I can't. I said, I don't even understand. I said, this is all ego stuff. You're supposed to get out of the ego to let this energy channel through you, you know? So, I said, I think the one who's not arguing is probably the one who's channeling the most energy. But, you know, I told him, I said, you know, if there was like maybe, you know, let's say, not to stereotype somebody, let's say, you know, there's a banker or whatever that makes his, you know, mortgages, locks people up, you know, he's foreclosing on people every day and whatever, you know. Then he goes and he pays like $1,000 to get the certificate. And then you have somebody that's worked, you know, meditates every day and works in the garden, is really in touch with nature, and he pays $100. Which one do you want to be channeling energy to, you know, or through you? And I said, I think it's, you know, it's all a matter of frequency and consciousness and energy and the evolution of the individual. It's not about the dollar.
Exactly. I mean, and this is a neat thing with where we're at right now with the recession. It's just, it's all preparing us, because I'm from the future where we don't have money at all. And people are like, what do you mean don't have money? You mean there's bartering? I'm like, no, because that's the same thing. You know, you're both, you're still in debt and you're still liable for the same, you know, greed and whatnot. And so it's more of living the way a tree does. You know, what do you charge a tree for it giving you an apple, for example? You know, a tree is unconditionally, regardless of who you are, what you have, what you believe in, what you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a silent example of how we were meant to live and be.
Those are some of my best friends. The trees. The one lady.
I get a lot of insights from trees, so I use a lot of, you know, my messages, metaphors within trees.
Yeah. It's, you know, I had one actually start talking to me once, and I wasn't on meds, I wasn't drinking, you know, but it's quite interesting. You know, there's intelligence in everything, and I think that because we don't realize that or haven't accepted that, we project our you know, belief system our on our animals and on the trees and everything else, and that when we're unconscious, we just project that unconsciousness to the animals, and I see these scientists come up with all these things like dogs don't have long-term memory and they can't do this and they can't that. You know, I've even heard one woman saying they don't have souls. And
I've heard that too. That's hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean, dogs are highly telepathic. They did a test to find out that the dog would bark and shake, wag its tail, and pant every time the owner thought about going home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're there to teach us unconditional love and loyalty. I find it so incredible that, you know, people say, oh, you know, animals don't need people. You know, we're the ones that's, you know, messing everything up and the world will function just fine. Maybe so, but I mean, you could feel like crap in the world could be, you know, totally in your face, and you come home and this dog thinks the world of you, just can't wait to see you and, you know, make you feel, you know, special and comforted and healed. So it really is this love and this companionship and this learning. I really feel that it's not just the animals, but it's also the star beings as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the grays doing experiments and testing on us or even on the cows. Well, you know what they told me one time when I asked them about this? I said, why are you guys doing this? Don't you know that you're, like, being seen as the bad guy? And they said, interesting. They said, look what we do to the cows, and look what you do to your cows.
Yeah.
And they said, at least we don't even do it to our own race like you guys do. And I was like, And they're like, all right, tell you what. You want us to stop? We'll stop when you stop.
Mm-hmm.
It showed me right then and there that they were neither bad nor good, but they were just mirroring us.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing, too, I've noticed that I had some insight into some of this, and what they said that they were testing the pollution levels, and there's been so much radiation released on the planet right now that's one of the reasons why they're collecting all the genitalia and everything else is to the reproductive areas to find out how much that damaged the reproduction cycle and the DNA. And I've heard a lot of different stories about this, but, you know, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever when I see these people. They're so afraid of ETs coming, you know, and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. And I go, God, they've been around since the beginning of time. You know, they're in the frescoes, they're in the cave paintings. They've been around forever. You know, they haven't sliced and diced us or turned us into human pilaf yet. So, you know, there's nothing to worry about. And if you're worried about it, anyway, what are you going to do with a being that's, you know, several thousand years ahead of you? You know,
one way, but also not in another way. You know, again, like I'm saying, it's a team. They need us, and we need them. See, and they're watching us very closely, like it's like Earth is a reality series for them, just like that South Park episode, which is really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
How, you know, that what happens to us happens to them, affects them. It's like a ripple well. And there are destructive ones that have harmed us, but, I mean, again, that's a mere reflection of what we've done to ourselves. We've just got to be very, like, conscientious of what we're manifesting with our thoughts, feelings, beliefs, words, and actions, because it is a form of magic, and it can be black or white magic, depending.
Well,
but we're here to solve, like, we're given so many problems because we're learning how to work and help other beings with their problems as well, because most of them are stagnated. They're advanced. But they need technology to do those kind of things. They look at us and they know we don't need the technology to do those kind of things. So they figure that what we go through here, what we learn, we will be able to take and share with them in their other worlds and prepare them so they can move forward in that way. So they will no longer be stagnant. It's really interesting. And then what you were saying about how they were taking, you know, bits of reproduction, well, that's true. That's what was also done with Noah's Ark. Ark was actually a spacecraft, and they didn't actually take two of each physical animal, but DNA samples of the animal. I mean, such is the case, which was also done for the creation of the planet. You know, it says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, the heavens being all the other stars and planets, and then the earth, because, you know, to create the diversity university or the cosmic stew, each planet contributed a bit of itself unto this planet. And able to, first of all, because to understand about diversity, and also to find ourselves within each other. You know, the best way to help people get along with is lock them in a room and say, you're not getting out until you learn to get along with each other. Well, that's kind of what's been going on here. And that's why our planet has, you know, plants and animals that only, you know, are certain areas of the world. Well, that imitates their other world where they're from.
Yeah, I know the geneticists that I know that are our top biophysicists, they all say without a doubt that, you know, we've been seeded and there's been, you know, so much genetics that have been seeded into the planet on you know, plants, animals, even human. You know, they said there's no possible way this could have evolved naturally. There's just such an extreme diversity, and there's not enough time for that extreme diversity to come here. And from my other contacts on other levels, you know, they make it very clear that we are a huge genetic experiment down here, and there's no other planet that has such a diversity of life on it.
That's correct. I want people to understand that because they're thinking the other worlds are really incredible, but they're not as impressive as Earth. That's what they always say.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Earth is the most beautiful.
and it needs to be preserved. I mean, we've got the diversity of wildlife, of plant life, of even human life here is unsurpassed anywhere else. And that's, I know that's one thing that they're very protective over. They won't let us, you know, launch the nukes on each other. Everybody's worried about that.
And a lot of them have already been deactivated as well. I mean, you're
yeah.
speaking about the kind of children and how aware they are. Well, some of them are also able to use microbes to completely disintegrate bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing they have, like the military, is just to say, we have them. And that just makes people, you know, freak out and their imagination runs away as them having no idea that, you know, a lot of the Star family has deactivated them.
Yeah, I know that there's a Dr. Sala, not the exopolitics one, but there's another one in the military, and he talks about how the ships came over and completely deactivated, you know, our missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened over in Russia, too, at the same time. So, you know, it's not a problem for them. And they also have footage of launching their tests. And they saw ships appear, and they just totally either vaporized the missile that they were shooting up into space, or they just took out the nose cone altogether.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can see the ship right next to the missile, and it's shooting a little beam out and doing its thing.
And people can assist with that on the collective, too. I mean, that's also the purpose of why we have the HAARP in the first place, that what we're going to do with it. I mean, if we have technology that is able to create earthquakes in China, you know, then, and what we know about technology is, you know, it's training wheels for what we can do on our own, then we can also, you know, prevent it from happening as well and reverse the process.
Yeah, maybe we should all focus on HAARP and just see it short-circuiting, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Going into turning itself into a cinder before it starts a major lightning chain reaction on the planet, which is what a lot of the scientists are saying could happen. They don't even know what can happen. It's like crazy little boys with gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just keep making bigger and bigger bombs until they either blow themselves up or harm all kinds of people. And unfortunately, the war industry is in control of all this. They don't have conscientious scientists or people that are conscious whatsoever that are in control of our of where our science is going, especially when it concerns the government. And that's the sad part.
It's also with Comet Tempel-1, where they, you know, spent billions of dollars in planning to, you know, shoot it and ask questions later, not being aware that there was, you know, it was a ship that was transitioning a lot of alien life forms. And my friend, when they became aware of it, they meditated over it, and they averted the missile from hitting the comet completely, like it just hit a little chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was almost like taking a bullet to the foot rather than in the head.
Yeah.
And it averted it, but it's just, it's really interesting because they're so unconscious of what they're doing, or maybe they are aware and it's like they're wanting to make it, you know, spiral it as bad as possible so that it motivates us to, you know, step into our superhero abilities, you know, like what is these horrible disasters that tend to bring out our X-Men abilities, where a grandmother will pick up a car, a stranger
yeah.
will run into a burning building to save another stranger. We will forget about our material stuff so that we can you know, be there for other people as well. And we just realized that it's not that important after all.
You know, I noticed in Hawaii they had a program there. I was looking into this, and they had all these massive nurseries, and they were making available. I don't know exactly how the program worked. One guy was telling me about it. I wanted to look into more, but it was people were just planting avocado trees and mangoes and papayas and lemon trees and, you know, orange trees everywhere, and they made them available to everybody, and it was part of a, you know, to make sure nobody starves and that everybody has something to eat. And I thought that was so amazing, that the way they were doing things there, and there's no reason why we can't do that ourselves, although we have Monsanto, you know, the evil empire trying to stop all this from happening. But, you know, rather than trying to force everybody to buy these monster seeds, that, you know, these Franken seeds they're creating. It seems our government, if they were awake, would start making this available to everybody, so everybody would be planting, you know, wherever that environment can best raise, nut trees, whatever, fruit trees, whatever, get everybody to start, you know, getting back into gardening and you know, kind of turn this planet back into a paradise. And, you know, I think that's something maybe you could, you know, invite a lot of your listeners, you might say, or a lot of the younger generation to get involved in, is to create these turn things back to the Garden of Eden where there's plenty. You know, we don't have this lack consciousness running.
That's exactly the mission and what we're heading towards. I mean, that's also why I promote that Anastasia books on my website, just because they're incredibly, brilliant, and creating a blueprint as to connecting with this aspect. I mean, it's about a girl that lives with wild animals, and just bears and wolves, and doesn't really have any shelter or fire or cook or anything. All the animals take care of her. And she has all the abilities, like she can bilocate and everything you can possibly imagine. And she's incredibly intelligent, too, and very psychic and in tune with not just past lives, future lives, multidimensional lives, interdimensional lives, and so forth. And, you know, a lot of people say she's an angel, a goddess, an alien. And she says, no, I'm human. I'm how you guys were so supposed to be had you not lost your connection to nature.
Exactly.
So the fact that, she lives in a sense like the lion laying down with the lamb, and then, that's what it was like in the Garden of Eden, and then it talks about that in the Bible in the, I'm not sure where it is, but it talks about the millennium where the lion lays down with the lamb again as well, which, when we start to become aware and do our inner work, then, we start to heal everything and the planet turns into a paradise again.
Yeah, we have these Bigfoot roaming around up here. You probably have them in your area too. But they seem to have evolved, through the nature kingdom in a totally different direction than we did. And they have the ability to bilocate, to appear and disappear, and they seem to totally work in harmony. They do a lot of shape-shifting and things. And
because that's normal and that's how we're meant to be, particularly if we're one and we're infinite, we're everything and nothing at the same time, then shape-shifting is just to, emulate and confirm that.
Yeah, the scientists up here think they're dumb apes and they're trying to catch them and they're putting, apples and fruit out for them, and they have all their fancy gear and their cameras all waiting for them. And every time this Bigfoot in this one area, he goes down and he gets the fruit every time, and they're just baffled. They can't figure out, how this happens, or none of the gear is triggered, but the fruit's gone every time. And they have cameras on it 24/7 and infrared cameras and everything, and it's just hilarious. And they haven't figured it out yet that maybe this isn't just a big dumb ape that you're trying to capture here, and he's making a fool out of you every time.
It's hard for them to grasp because, they still don't have equality. They still don't believe that something could have an intelligence outside of, just human kind of thing. And it's kind of sad that the equality is still lacking, that if you can't find the intelligence and respect a bug, when bugs are so in tune and they can let you know of natural disasters 2 weeks before their time, we can save so many people. We can avert so many things if we would just swallow our pride and just work with everything as a team rather than, survival of the fittest, every man for himself, dominate
exactly.
And control one another.
Well, that what I find interesting in being in the UFO field for quite some time, unfortunately, that group just doesn't know how to get along at all. There's just a lot of competition and jealousy, and then so much disinformation that's filtered in there that it's very hard to work with that group. And like you're doing, I think the youth are the ones that are seeing through all this, and they're the ones to work with. But I see they bring these people on, and they're the expert in the field. And you say, well, what qualifies you as an expert? They said, well, I got my PhD at Harvard. I go, really? They teach UFO at Harvard? At Harvard, and they go, well, no. And I go, well, actually, they kind of dismiss it all together. So on what do you base your expertise on? I said, have you ever seen a ship? No. Have you ever been on a ship? No. Do you have any idea whatsoever who they are, their culture, their customs? Or they go, no. And they go, but I'm here to validate whether you're having a real experience or not.
Yeah. I know. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I just go, why, we get them coming up here all the time, and the little kids are out there, cooking marshmallows, hold them up for the spacemen. They go, here's spacemen, have a marshmallow, and the ships come in and power up and fly over. And, and these guys are out there with all their gear, and they'll stay high, they'll come in and they'll say we're here, but their contact will be according to their consciousness. They scan them and they go, well, I don't even want to talk with these guys. I don't want to come any closer. It's, I'll wait for the little kid with the marshmallow to come back, basically.
It's interesting because NASA, has, they're so so-called all the intelligence and the money, and you're going out to space, and it's incredibly lonely, and they're finding nothing, or they are finding stuff, but they're covering up, but it's like such a challenge. But, you know, here, you know, they're coming to children, you know, left and right, and children are speaking with them and, you know, being taken off on incredible journeys. And so it really is, it's like only one that possesses the heart of a child may enter the kingdom of God, and that a child will lead the way. And so it's really just helping these NASA characters and these educated characters to really just connect with what they knew as a child.
Exactly. You know, I mean, we've had
their
NASA.
Inner child, our yeah. true power, our birthright.
Yeah, we've had several NASA people come here, and they have their own team. NASA has their own investigative team that they don't tell you about. Whenever there's a UFO flap going on, they send their group out there, and at a moment's notice, they have their bags packed, they go and check it out. And they've been here as well, and they know they're here, they know it exists. And there are people within NASA that are blowing the lid off this. And I just saw something on YouTube, I put it out over the list recently, and it was all this incredible NASA footage of UFOs. And so there's no doubt, you know, most of the astronauts have come forward and said, yeah, they've followed every one of our missions, you know, so... So they know they're there and everything, and I think, you know, when you've got a time scene impulse saying 80 or 86% of the people believe UFOs exist and there's a government cover-up, you know, why continue? I mean, the cat's out of the bag. It's over. Why even continue? You're not serving, you know, you're serving a small minority of the people
I think they're waiting for a certain time to reveal it, and I think they want to reveal it on their terms.
Yeah.
You know, like problem, reaction, solution. So, like, with the towers, their solution was, you know, raise taxes and bomb innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always their own kind of solution so that they still can have the control and see if people start having independent thought and, you know, speaking and connecting with these races, then it's like losing their control.
Exactly.
And their hold over us.
And somebody asked me, well, why would UFOs be a threat? And I said, well, think about it. You know, you've got the war industry, you know, running things, basically. I said they stand for universal peace. They've transcended disease, and now you've got the pharmaceutical companies calling the shots here, too, as well. And then, you know, you've got the oil industry, and their ships don't run on gas. I mean, they're totally fuelless technologies. So they're a threat to the entire status quo of the Earth, which is completely unsustainable. And
the control is really just not for resources. That's just a tool.
Yeah.
It's not for the oil. It's not for the money. It's not, you know, to have us slaves, per se. It's to have us in a state of fear because, like the movie Monsters, Inc., that is their food.
Mm-hmm.
And so to not have that is really scary. It's almost like telling a drug addict, you know, you no more drugs,
yeah.
taking their addiction away. And so then they become, you know, very unsavory kind of characters.
Yeah, they told me that once. I said, God, why are these guys so upset at me? And they said, you're taking away their food.
Yes, exactly.
They said, you're waking people up and you're taking away their food.
Which is why they want to reveal it in their own terms by saying, yes, they're here. Look at how bad the world is. I'm really sure that the reason they're not revealing, you know, all the things that they're covering up is because they want to make it as bad as possible before, you know, they reveal what's going on. And then they say, okay, look how bad it is. The only chance you have is to leave Earth and come sit with us to this other world paradise kind of thing. And it's almost like that Twilight Zone episode and that Simpson episode, How to Cook for 40 Humans kind of thing. Where they continue to, you know, we continue to be their food kind of thing by going off with them and choosing to leave our paradise kind of thing by them trying to make it as bad as possible. So to convince them to go, and the reason they want to convince us to go is because they don't have much time left here.
Yeah.
The frequencies are upping and they have a time limit, and 2012 is really a point where they're not allowed to be on the planet. Actually, the 2012 thing is way off. The Mayan calendar says technically it's 2011, and really if we understand past, present, and future are existing at the same time simultaneously, you know, we're really kind of messed up with this concept of time, and particularly for waiting for something to happen. And we all know about, you know, waiting for something to happen as opposed to being the change and,
exactly.
and seizing the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's 2012, 2013, give or take, even 14, is when their time limit is to be off the planet. So So in that time, they've known about this since the beginning, that they've been preparing as many people as possible, the religious people, the mystical people, the starseed people. This really concerns me because I'm very, you know, I'm here for the people, and I don't like them playing with them in this way. So I'm very protective. That's why I call myself the modern day fairy godmother, because I'm very motherly towards them. And it's just when I hear the starseed speak about, you know, their longing to go home and how they feel like they were abandoned here, and I just tell them that, you know, it's like if you're an apple that falls from a tree, you cannot go back on that branch as much as you like. But what you can do is, as an apple, inside you have the seeds to realize that rather than if you can't go home, you can become home. If you are from heaven and you miss heaven because you've been planted in a kind of hellish area with a lot of, let's say, fertilizer, which is shit, then, you know, that can give you the potential to grow into an incredibly beautiful flower or tree, greater than anything you thought possible as a little seed. Does a little seed fathom what kind of tremendous tree or flower it could be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I try to help them understand, to help them stay here and do their work that they came here to do. As a light worker, that's what you do. You bring light in dark areas. You don't avoid it. You know, because it will creep up and find you anyway. We choose the toughest challenges.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if there's nothing you're given that you can't handle and life is particularly challenging, which it is, then you must be a master. I mean, after all, you didn't beat 500 million sperm for nothing. You've won that race. You obviously have something very important you came here to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed that I hear that a lot, and I just said, well, you're here to bring heaven to earth, not to run off. And if you want to ascend, you have it backwards anyway, because everybody wants to go, but you don't ascend by wanting to get out of here and judging everything. You ascend by loving everything, including yourself and your own physical body, and it creates a frequency and a quickening.
That's right. To leave the physical body, you know, the spirit works very hard to get a body. If people only saw the lineup in order to incarnate on this planet right now,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's why they'd understand immediately why we're overpopulated and why there's such a race to with sperm to be here. And so it's just like, I forgot what it's saying. I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. No, it's definitely, you know, we need to really anchor that higher consciousness energy. Now, I know the beings, the higher beings, whoever you want to call them, there's so many different ones out there that are working with this. And I know some are just kind of observing, but they still have this higher consciousness and energy, which is affecting the earth just by them being here. And then there's some that are actively engaging, you know, in this awakening and healing process. And I've noticed the highest of beings, you know, they operate through universal law, but they're totally altering the grid here. And it's a huge universal event that was happening naturally, but they're part of it, and they're helping this shift come on. And you know, we're getting the same information, is that most of the you know, it's been going on for quite some time, and a lot of the really negative ones can't even handle it here now. It's already gone past their ability to stay here, and they're leaving, and there's a few left. You know, there's a little bit of cleanup going on, but eventually, you know, this is, you know, heaven is going to return to earth according to all the prophecies, Native American, biblical, whatever.
See, but I don't want anyone to be left behind. I don't think anybody needs to go. I don't think that, you know, any of that is really necessary. I think if that is to happen, then that is to fragment ourselves yet again. I mean, a tree exists half in light, half in dark, in perfect balance and harmony. It doesn't judge the, you know, the soil that hides its roots.
I'm talking about choice, that there are some beings that have been kind of wreaking havoc here, let's say some regenerate ETs that have
chosen why?
Not to evolve, you know, not to go with the transition here, and they're I don't think there's anywhere to go, though. I don't know where they would go to get away from this, because this is a big event. They'd have to go out of this.
They can go back to their world, but I do see what you mean. There is choice, but the origin of the dark beings is two things. It's either if you're only told you're bad, that's the only idea you ever have, and then you become it, self-fulfilling prophecy, and then the amplification and the confirmation of others constantly telling you that, and like a prison, for example, they get worse and worse and more violent, right,
mm-hmm.
when they come out. And the other part is playing their role. A lot of people are lost to the role. I find that the Illuminati are actually very divine beings. And my guys explained it like this. They said, Jess, if somebody who plays a villain in a movie, do you think they're bad in real life? And I said, no. And they said, so why would you think the Illuminati who are playing the villain in your life story is bad in real life?
Yeah, it seems like their function, like you were saying, is to bring out the good in you and get people to rise up and claim their power, and you need that backboard or that event to get people to rise up. And I kind of see it's a game, you know. I know they're playing their part, and it's not my part to inspire the other people. Okay, now they're there for you to regain your power and stand up and you know, make your voice heard or whatever, or start acting in a totally different manner or whatever.
Exactly, James. It's like a video game. It's like all the lives you've lived in a, you know, for a video game, you've learned what works and what doesn't work,
mm-hmm.
and you've lost many lives, but you also have, as you're learning to, you know, get past the boss, you have the cheats. You have people who have played the game before, people who have helped create the game, who know the secrets and the inside into it, and that it could be considered the angels or the guides.
I know they're mixed, too. I mean, I know people in the FBI and the outfit agencies and things, and they're very down-to-earth, good people, and they want to do what's right, and it's a very mixed bag. And then it's the same even with the Illuminati. Some of the families, some of the most wealthiest families, they have some really good people in there that are working on the side of turning things around.
See, that's the thing I think also with Obama. I don't think necessarily that he's a bad guy, but I think that he's in a situation where he is a puppet.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do what they want him to do. And there's a huge, you know, people don't understand the process of to become a president, all the things he has to do, which is rather embarrassing that, you know, could, you know, really, you know, threaten his family and his image. So, I mean, it's a really tricky situation.
I would say as soon as the president gets into office, they show him the Kennedy film, and they, you know, to indoctrinate him, and they said, okay, do you need to know anything else, you know, and that's about it.
That's exactly right. And just to be careful of how people are so good at telling you exactly what you want to hear, and they've been playing that key constantly with politicians promising you the world, but then has their actions ever followed up to their words or their promises?
Well, it's a form of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over. We have them, I call them federal liars, you know, basically they get up there and they tell you everything you want to hear, and they make all these promises, and then they get into office and they do the exact opposite. And this has happened how many times?
I know. It's like sick. It's like a pattern. How come we can't catch on and figure that out? I mean, it's not psychic at all. It's like, hello, look at the pattern.
It's in your face. How many times do you have to have it in your face before you realize that?
I think Einstein said the same quote on that. Didn't he say that the problems of today cannot be solved with the same thinking of yesterday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's something I always tell people. In politics, you have the horse, and you have the rider, and then you have the owner of the horse. And what you're seeing is the horse. And sometimes every once in a while you see the rider, but you never see the owner. and the owner decides whether that horse, you know, continues in the race or becomes dog food, basically.
Yes.
And the rider just tries to steer the horse in the right direction, and the horse just has to kind of do what it's told, basically. And if that horse wakes up and smells the coffee and starts moving in a direction that, you know, is in the highest and best good of humanity on earth, they usually become dog food, unfortunately.
And no one ever tells the horse if it makes a mistake or trips that it will become crazy glue.
Yeah, exactly. So it's you know, you wonder when people are going to finally, you know, come around and wake up and smell the coffee when they have the same experience again and again and again, and they give their power away to these people again and again and again, and they expect these people to take care of them, and they get disappointed again and again. At what point do you just go, well, you know what, I'm not going to participate anymore?
That's why I think, you know, Bush did a very good job of waking people up and realizing, oh, my goodness, these people don't necessarily have our best intention in mind. And they didn't, no longer do they say, what are they going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? What are we, the people, going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a major wake-up call. I don't think that, you know, people who have woken up early, it's not about being special or more advanced or anything. I just think that there are certain ones who are just called to go through the process earlier to understand it and then walk other people through as they start to recognize the signs and the phases.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see it as, because I feel everybody will wake up, but it's just at the right time, their own triggers. It's different from one to the other. You can try to push this stuff on people and they can deny it. Like, I denied it. The thing is, those things constantly change. I've made fun of my father my whole life, and now I've become my father, you know? So it's really comforting for other people to know that as well. Like, you can plant these seeds, and you can share this information, and they may reject it, but later on, when it starts to make sense, they'll come to you, and they'll ask about it.
Yeah, when enough experience validates what they've been saying, they go, well, wait a second, maybe I better go back and look at the rest of the story.
And other times, it's just going to come out of the blue. They may have absolutely no, like, experience with spiritual things at all, and then, you know, hit 30 and, you know, on their anniversary, go on a vacation in to Sedona and climb this mountain and suddenly get downloaded all these sacred sounds, and now they're traveling all over the world teaching sacred sounds and healing the planet and other people. I've seen that happen, too. It's just really incredible to watch the process and to be a pioneer, to pave the way. I feel that's the purpose, what the older generation has done, you know, having to hold this information in a time where it was very taboo, where there's no internet or no one to talk to about it, you know. Mm-hmm. They made it possible for souls like me to incarnate at this time, and it's like passing on the baton.
Exactly.
And finding the best way to do it that's, you know, integrating and working with all the beliefs. Like, my favorite thing to say is, you know, if you look at our culture today, our society, indigenous culture say we came from the stars, and our culture, our society says, no, that's crazy, that's erroneous. Yet Christianity says we came from Adam, and science says we came from atoms. Atom, that sounds awfully similar, don't you think? And where do atoms come from? There's only one place that atoms come from, and that is the stars. Therefore, everybody's correct, just a slight different interpretation.
Yeah, your little wraparound, it all ends up in the same way. You know, we're about out of time here. Can you give your website and how people can contact you?
Yes, my website is www.jessicamystic.ca, all one word, CA for Canada. And you can contact me via my website, my form, my email, jessicamystic@yahoo.ca. I'm also on Facebook, Skype. I'm everywhere. I'm easy to get a hold of, Instant Messenger. So I'm here for all you guys.
Great.
Thank you very much.
I can't thank you enough for the work you're doing, and I'm sure we'll be staying in touch and get you out here to the ranch. And we have a lot of younger folks coming out here on a regular basis. Actually, May, we're having the Paranormal State people coming back out again.
So, well, I'd love that. Thank you so much, James, for having me on the show.
Oh, yeah. We'll do it again real soon.
That'd be great.
All right. So thank you so much for coming on the show. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. Have a great evening, and watch the skies. They're here.